It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
Yes, it is. Over the past week, the Green Party accepted a confidence and supply relationship with Labor, and I began by asking the Green Party co-leader what his priorities were during the negotiation period, as well as the priorities of the other party co-leader, Marama Davidson.
I know you've said that as a minor party, there's nothing that you're hard line about, and there was that controversy with the wealth tax. But were there any strong priorities for you during the process?
Well, you remember that we went into the election campaign with six top priorities. So they were in the domains of housing, energy, transport, oceans, incomes, and so on. And what we did during the negotiations was basically to say, well, look, obviously we want to have the opportunity to advance some or all of those priorities as much as we can. Now, the circumstances of the election meant that we were in a more constrained position, shall we say, because Labor didn't actually need us to govern. And so that kind of put a filter on it. But where we landed with four portfolios between the two of us, so I've got climate change and biodiversity, and Marama has picked up Jan Logie's portfolio of the prevention for family and sexual violence, and she's also an associate housing minister, means that we can actually advance most of those priorities during the course of the coming term.
And now that you have this agreement and you are able to fulfil, as you hope, a lot of the six policies, the six priorities that you had during the campaign period, what's first on the agenda for the Greens?
Well, I can tell you what I'm up to immediately in the domain of climate change. It is going to be a very busy 3 years. So we had two major pieces of legislation in the last term. We're actually going to have five coming up in this term. So the one that most people who pay attention to the climate change space will be aware of is that in May we're going to receive the advice from the Climate Change Commission as to what New Zealand's emissions budgets should be. So these are kind of 5 year long stepping stone budgets of the total amount of pollution we're allowed to put into the atmosphere, and each of those stepping stones is smaller than the one before. So you know, it's this kind of constant tightening of the screw in terms of the pollution that we put into the atmosphere. That comes through in May, and I've got to take that through Parliament. And it's going to be really important because it'll be the first time that the Climate Change Commission has presented us with these budgets. And it's very important to me that we follow their advice.
On to the cannabis referendum results. On the 6th of November, the final results for the cannabis referendum came through, with 48.4% of people voting yes, they want reforms, and 50.7% voting no. An extremely close result. The Green Party were openly and strongly campaigning for this reform. What are your thoughts on a margin that is this slim?
Well, obviously, you know, I think what that strongly suggests is that there is a mandate for change. I also have my suspicions that some of the people who voted no weren't against the idea of reform. They just weren't comfortable with the legalisation model that we were proposing. And so if you do make that assumption, then what that suggests is that there is a majority for change in some form. Now, we haven't had time to sort of sit down and regroup and work out what that might be. But obviously, you know, we do need to do something about it, because when you've got a result that's as close to 50-50 as that, I think there is an obligation to attempt to, I guess, support both sides of the argument to some extent, to the extent that you can.
It was the chair of the New Zealand Drug Foundation. They sent out a press release basically just reiterating what you've just said, that based on how close the result is, yeah, a change shouldn't be ruled out. The referendum wasn't binding, but what does this really mean? Like, with the Labour Party having a vast majority, what would you say the likelihood of any reform, albeit like the referendum wanted to have, or anything else? What's the likelihood of that, would you say?
Well, I mean, the Prime Minister has ruled out the idea that we would essentially go against the result of the referendum by passing a legalisation package anyway. But, and like I said, we really haven't had a chance yet to sort of sit down and talk this through. You know, there are some, if you take the kind of principles behind the Yes campaign, It was all about harm minimisation and reform of our justice system, the criminal justice system. And so what that suggests, if you go back to first principles there, is that there may be things that you can do that stop short of legalisation, but which both reduce harm and alleviate some of the pressure on the criminal justice system. So the very first cab off the rank there, the Prime Minister's already signalled that we'll be looking at legislation to legalise the testing of drugs at festivals over the summer. That's an immediate thing that we can do that doesn't change the legal status of the drug, but does reduce harm and, in fact, in some cases, save lives.
I will move on to overseas politics now. As I'm sure everyone, all the listeners know, over the weekend, the US election results trickled through. As a political leader in Aotearoa New Zealand, what were your thoughts as these results came in? And what are your thoughts on the fact that Donald Trump has not yet conceded?
Well, I'm wholly unsurprised that Trump hasn't conceded the election, even though the evidence is overwhelmingly clear that Biden won the race and won it sort of square and fair. So I guess, we're just going to have to let that play out. But I think it is sort of the final nail in the coffin for Donald Trump's fairly tattered reputation overall, that he's just behaving in such an extraordinary way. This is one of those situations, I think, that the American system for electing their presidents is deeply flawed. And that's a problem of the Constitution having been written 250-odd years ago. And not really being able to kind of modernise and move with the times. But that's something that's unlikely to get resolved. I just hope that maybe they're able to kind of work out at least some ways that they can improve the system that they've got, because when you compare it to our own, it's sort of tempting to offer them to say, hey, do you want a bit of help running your elections? Because it does seem like a bit of a shambles.
Hmm. And as the Minister for Climate Change in New Zealand, how do these results now affect you? I mean, Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the 2015 Paris Agreement and was a public climate change denier. How do you imagine having President-elect Joe Biden in the White House will affect efforts to combat the climate crisis globally and your role doing that in Aotearoa?
Well, look, as climate change, minister, I'm delighted with the change in policy that's been signalled by the new administration. I think that the United States, as one of the world's largest polluters, has a significant role to play in its own right. But perhaps even more importantly than that, American leadership on this is critical. So the fact that Trump was, pulling out and really trashing the Paris Agreement and the international system, I think gave sort of hope to others in other authoritarian regimes that were also kind of chafing against it, such as Brazil and so on. And actually, that now means that the pressure really goes back on to those countries to continue playing ball.
And lastly, the United States is a deeply divided country at present. From your position as a leader in New Zealand, how do you view the role that President-elect Joe Biden now has in bridging this divide?
No, look, he and his administration have got a massive task in front of them because, of course, I mean, it's really clear that although Donald Trump obviously legitimised racism, misogyny, violence, undermining of public institutions, and so on, he was really a symptom of that kind of malaise in American society rather than the cause of it. He did exacerbate it and make it worse through the position of the presidency, but it was always there. I mean, that's how he got elected in the first place. And, I don't think one president by themselves is going to be able to fix that because, a lot of it comes down to, the nature of their institutions, the nature of their media, the role that social media has to play, the kind of economic system that creates this very disgruntled underclass that is susceptible to the kinds of messages that Trump put out, and so on. And so that is a gargantuan and complex set of challenges that are intertwined with each other. And I guess I just hope that the new administration does try and tackle that rather than just sort of sail on as if you can sort of ignore those kinds of deep-rooted problems, because otherwise that's just not going to go away and it'll become a more permanent feature.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.